Washington debates major federal spending cuts or a government shutdown.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open. A look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, what happens to the economy if there is a government shutdown come Friday? And what happens if there isn't? But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are up. The Dow's up 25 points at 12,402. The NASDAQ up about 0.1%, and the S&P 500 up 0.25%. McDonald's is hiring. The company will hold its first national hiring day on April 19th to hire, get this, 50,000 workers at restaurants across the country. That's in part to keep more McDonald's open 24 hours a day. Now let's get to the budget showdown in Washington. Lawmakers have until Friday to reach a deal on tens of billions of dollars in budget cuts or the government will shut down. Let's bring in our regular Monday analyst, Julia Coronado. She's chief economist at the investment bank BNP Paribas, and she's with us live from New York. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
Well, I know I'm sure you probably wanted to talk about the McDonald's story, but let's go government shutdown, Julia. What if there is a shutdown? What happens?
Well, it's going to affect some government workers and some government contracts, and it may cause some volatility in financial markets, but more than likely it would be short-lived and these effects would be temporary. It wouldn't be a big story for the economy.
All right, so short-lived. What if there's no shutdown, but we get tens of billions of dollars in budget cuts?
Right. Well, keep in mind that the government played a central role in helping the economy exit the Great Recession,
right.
And the government deficit expanded enormously. So what we're embarking on is the inevitable ratcheting back of that stimulus. So we're haggling over tens of billions of dollars, but the deficit this year is projected at $1.5 trillion. So right now the arguments are about setting priorities, and the government is not going to be the source of support that it has been over the last couple of years.
Julia Coronado, chief economist with the investment bank BNP Paribas. Thanks as always.
My pleasure.
Well, now to one of the items on the chopping block if Republicans get their way, the authority of the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate greenhouse gases. As Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports now from Washington, the fight over that authority has lobbyists and manufacturers working overtime.
But times are tough. So why is the EPA pushing new regulations that could force businesses to close and lead to more jobs?
The National Association of Manufacturers has been running that ad in industrial states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, where incumbent Democrats, including President Obama, are vulnerable. Association lobbyist Alicia Meads.
Profit margins are extremely tight right now, and we feel that these regulations are hurting that more and will cause job loss.
Frank O'Donnell heads the environmental group Clean Air Watch. He says the EPA regulations would save manufacturers money. They would have to be more energy efficient. That means lower power bills.
To hear these crazy horror stories from the business community just makes my head spin because it's like a bizarro world.
These arguments have even wormed their way into the budget negotiations. Some Republicans have insisted that legislation limiting the EPA's power be part of any eventual budget compromise. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation, supporting customer choice and clean, efficient energy sources and technologies, working with customers nationwide to create a sustainable energy future. Constellation.com. By Chevrolet, undertaking a carbon-reducing effort, investing in projects like wind farms and planting trees across America over the next few years. ChevyCarbonReduction.com. And by Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at Microsoft.com/cloud.
Today, one of the biggest names in the blogosphere is moving to a new home. Andrew Sullivan, who attracted more than 1 million people per month to the website of The Atlantic, is leaving for the Daily Beast. Marketplace's David Gura reports now on the value of a blogger.
Two beagles, Dusty and Eddie, guard Andrew Sullivan's loft. It's spacious, but he feels more comfortable in his blog cave behind a velvet curtain.
It's a narrow room. It's got slate floor, got two big windows and an old mission chair covered in rugs.
Every morning, Sullivan downs coffee and ginger snaps as he wades into the web.
the belief is that everything that needs to be said now has already been said somewhere. We just have to find it.
And, he says, create a community conversation about it. Today, he moves that community to the Daily Beast. It's paying him handsomely to bring in new visitors and online ad revenue. Edward Felsenthal is the Beast's executive editor.
It's not just about adding numbers to the Beast's readership, although we're glad for that. It's about adding repeat visitors and engaged visitors and smart visitors.
The kind Fortune 500 companies love. College-educated, well-off readers who spend a lot of time on one site, if statistics from the Atlantic's ad department are any indication. Almost 5 years ago, The Atlantic was an old magazine looking for online readers when editor James Bennett brought Sullivan on board. Today, he says he's sad to see Sullivan go.
He's got a much bigger audience. We've got a much bigger audience. This has worked really well for all of us, and we're all going to be fine, and we're all going to be friends, and, you know, we're all going to stay in the same fight to keep doing great journalism.
By the time Sullivan left, one in every five visitors to theatlantic.com read his blog. Last year, that helped the magazine sell more than $6 million worth of online ads and turn a profit for the first time in at least a decade. Now, the Daily Beast gets to capitalize on Sullivan.
I love the idea of the possibility of individual writers, unknown writers, slowly building readerships through this chaotic world of the web, then finding a point, a tipping point,
where a media company realizes they're worth something. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
And finally, as baseball season gets underway, Facebook wanted to see which teams are the most liked. Well, here are the statistics. Phillies fans are the most loyal because they are least willing to like other teams. The Yankees, the Indians, and the Blue Jays have the most fair weather fans who only like them when they're winning. There are more details at our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, which, by the way, is home to the Angels and the Dodgers, the two least liked teams in Facebook's survey. I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
A lot of businesses are converting to clean energy because, you know, it's good for the planet, but it's a pretty sweet deal for them, too.
As the price of traditional power increases, our prices generally stay flat.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Going green to save some green. We'll have the numbers and the day's business news as well next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.